women are furious. Why? We've seen it start with the women's marches. We've seen the Me Too movement. We have just seen an extraordinary number of women elected to office for the first time in this country, including so many women of color. You, my friends, are about to be part of history. This is the beginning of a social upheaval that has taken a long time to come about. Find out all the whys, all the wheres, how this is going to impact your life. Join me on my Let Me Tell You podcast, part of the OG Podcast Network. I need you to listen to it. I'm Joan Hamer. Welcome to Let Me Tell You, the Joan Hamburg podcast, which we do every week. And of course, this particular podcast is going to really take a look at the revolutionary power of women's anger. I know it sounds very serious and very scary, but the truth is, it's a historic movement that is changing life for all of us, including when you look at the recent election, the ballot, women, and women of color. And friends, this is just beginning. But we are also at this time, believe it or not, Thanksgiving is right ahead of us. And I'm going to give you, I promise, the famous family, the Lyman family. That's my mother's maiden family, maiden name. The Ritz cracker stuffing, which, I don't know, hundreds of thousands of you have been making over the years. But for those of you, no matter where you live, who are planning to come in for the parade, and if you ask everyone lined up, they're from everywhere in the country, let me give you my secret list of dining options not far from the parade, and most important, that aren't going to break the bank. You'd be surprised how many restaurants are charging $100, $125 a head. That's a lot of turkey. West Bank Cafe on West 42nd Street. I love this place. They're going to have two floors open Thanksgiving, three-course menu from an organic turkey. Or, you don't like turkey, have steak, have salmon. Family platters, $50 a person, $28 for kids. And wine is very inexpensive here, too. 212-695-6909. And my friend Lydia Bastianich and her son Joe, two of the great people in the world of food, you know, in addition to their wonderful restaurants, that fancy restaurants, you know that they own Becco in the Theater District. It's like one of my favorites. It's so inexpensive. You get a choice of three pastas and antipasto, that's normal. But for Thanksgiving, they're doing a four-course feast for $64.95 a person. You're going to have the pasta sampling, turkey, ham, short ribs, everything there. $31 a bottle of wine if you want it. You do need a reservation. 212-397-7597. Then right inside the Refinery Hotel on West 39th Street. Do you guys know Parker and Quinn? A three-course meal. And listen to what they're doing. They're doing an apple cider brine, slow-roasted turkey breast, brioche and duck fat onion dressing, all kinds of goodies, appetizers, dessert, the whole bit, $49 a person, $22 for a kid under 12. Now, Virgil's Barbecue on 44th Street is doing a takeout menu that will feed at least 10 for $249. Guys, no, divide. Deal. That's a really good deal. 212-921-9494. An 18-pound smoked turkey. Have you ever had a smoked turkey? So good. Cornbread, sausage, pecan stuffing. A feast for that price. And Carmine's, you know, the famous family-style restaurant on Broadway Uptown and on West 44th Street, is doing a family meal for 6 to 8 people. You can also take it out, eat it in, $274.95. and on the Upper West Side to $64.95. Takeout is less, and it includes an 18-pound turkey plus all the trimmings. So seek and you shall find. This is all part of Joan's world, but our podcast is really interesting because I came of age in a radio business when the guys were yelling and screaming. Bob Grant, remember Bob Grant? He passed away, but he was a famous broadcaster. Get off my phone. A big yellow screamer, but he was really a great guy, but a yellow screamer. When they try to get women to fill in, and women would try to do the Bob Grant stuff, get off my phone. Huh? You can't imagine the anger. Not from women, from everyone. You sound like a, using the B word, you're horrible, get off the air. I didn't do that. But they had good broadcasters. They couldn't do it. Because a guy can yell and scream, and he's a star. And a woman can yell and scream, and she's nuts. So a fascinating look, and a look at what's happened. When it's been harnessed, look at the results of this election. Women everywhere. Anyway, we've got a great podcast straight ahead of you, and make these Thanksgiving reservations. I'm Joan Hamburg for Let Me Tell You. All right, everyone. Joan Hamburg here. And what an interesting time to talk to Rebecca Traister, author of the New York Times bestseller, All the Single Ladies, her brand new book, Good and Mad, The Revolutionary Power of Women's Anger. And we have seen, which we think is unprecedented, an uprising all over the country on behalf of women's rights. But right now, as we've just come through a midterm election, how fascinating. One of the great moments. 277 women up for Congress and governor, and at the latest count, over 110 of them won. So, Rebecca, must have been fascinating for you, who this is your area. And by the way, Rebecca is a writer at large for New York Magazine. She contributes to Elle and writes about women in not only entertainment, but politics and media, and contributes to many other major publications. So a record-setting election for women.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And many of those women who were driven to run for office in part out of their anger in the wake of the 2016 election, one thing you heard over and over again was how anger at the election of Donald Trump, who had run a very aggressive, racist, xenophobic, misogynistic campaign, who had admitted to grabbing women against their will, was elected president over a qualified woman competitor. Many women's anger at this outcome drove them to run for office themselves, and not only run for office, to work for other women running for office. And so the result that we saw yesterday, Tuesday, 2 days ago.
I know, it seems whatever.
Yeah. Right, it seems both like it was yesterday and 30 years ago. But that anger, we can draw a direct line between women feeling angry about what they perceived as a political injustice and a wrong, and the record number of women who are now going to be representing us in Congress and in governor's mansions.
And so many women are women of color, which is also revolutionary here.
It is absolutely revolutionary. You know, this country, in part, is founded on this what has always been a false promise of representative democracy. Our founding was born at a revolutionary anger at taxation without representation by the British that provoked a revolutionary war out of which the country was built. And its foundational promises were of liberty, equality, and participation. But we know that from the start, what our founding documents cemented was a world, a government, a system in which African Americans were enslaved and did not have a franchise or the right to civic participation, were not even considered fully human in our founding documents, in which women were not enfranchised, in which their labor was unpaid and supported the public and political participation of men, in which they did not have any kind of legal rights or protections in a public sphere. And it has been, more than almost 2.5 centuries of fighting within the United States for increased participatory power, not to mention representation in our government structures, and we're still very far from it, right?
Still
under a quarter of Congress is going to be women in a country where women are 52% of the population. But so it's not representative yet, but things
it's
like
getting there.
Making elections get us baby steps closer, and that's crucial, and especially when you're talking about women of color, especially on a Democratic side, because women of color, especially black women, have long been the base of the Democratic Party, the voters, the organizers, those driving progressive change, and yet they have been very badly underserved and underrepresented, even by the party that relies on their support. And so the fact that so many of the women who won on Tuesday are women of color is absolutely crucial and corrective.
And, well, also the face of the first Muslim American woman.
Two Muslim women.
Two, right.
Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib.
And when these women say that they're going to take the party forward, even though, many are going to be freshmen, we believe it because we know that they're driven.
They are absolutely driven. And it's that so many of them are young. This is a moment where we're really seeing a new generation of leaders rising. And it's the women who were elected, the women and some of the men who were elected, but it's also some of those who lost but have become clearly crucial to the party's future. Look at Stacey Abrams, who may or may not be heading to a recount in her Georgia gubernatorial race. She has come closer to winning Georgia for Democrats than any recent gubernatorial, Senate, or presidential candidate in decades. She is a rising star and powerful leader in the Democrats' future. So I would argue are Beto O'Rourke and Andrew Gillum, even though Andrew Gillum may be heading to a runoff or a recount as well. But it looks like they have not won their races, and yet they are going to be the Democrats' future. And that's what we can say about this incoming class in Congress, in the House of Representatives, and in gubernatorial races. We are looking at the Democrats' future, and it is not comprised of mostly white men, which is what politics past has been comprised of.
Right. And it's such important lessons for all of us. And using this anger, and by the way, I'm talking to Rebecca Traister, Good and Mad, her brand new book, The Revolutionary Power of Women's Anger. We all just witnessed what has gone on, one of the great historic moments of our time. And it's always been, when I was, Rebecca, a young broadcaster, there was a guy called Bob Grant. He passed away years ago, but he was a great broadcaster and angry. I'd always yell and scream like a lot of broadcasters do today, a lot of guys, get off my phone and everything like that.
Yeah.
And I still remember when if he would go on vacation or something and they try to get a woman to fill in for him.
Yes.
Oh, my management would absolutely go berserk. It's horrible to hear a woman angry. Mm-hmm. This woman sounds like a you-know-what, and they would go on and on. The mailbags were full. So how times are changing.
They are changing, although you'll still find those double standards. For example, we just heard during the Brett Kavanaugh hearings, there was no way that Christine Blasey Ford, though she had plenty of things
would
to
testify.
Be reasonably angry about, there is no way that Christine Blasey Ford could have raised her voice in anger and been taken seriously. She would have been written off as hysterical and over-emotional and unhinged. Her story would have been less believed than it was as she presented it, which was solicitous, quiet, polite. And yet Brett Kavanaugh, when he defended himself, he could use anger to his own benefit, to amplify how serious and powerful and wrong he
right.
meant. White men, especially powerful white men, can use anger in a way that helps them, in a way that and yet anger for women remains often a mark against them.
Terrible. You're right. And, you know, can we call it a gender war, male and female? But anger is so different. Do you think that the Kavanaugh thing played a role in propelling a lot of these women to victory?
I think that it played a part, but there are so many things that have played a part. I mean, you're looking at a 2 years, there's such a connection between so much of what's happened over the past few years. The fury that was building even before the election of Donald Trump, anger at racism, the growth of the Black Lives Matter movement, anger at economic inequality as exemplified by the Occupy Wall Street movement, by Bernie Sanders' campaign and his success on the left. There's all kinds of anger building, and then you had the Donald Trump Access Hollywood tape that made so many women angry, and so many told their own stories of having been grabbed, and then he was elected president anyway.
No one pays attention.
The Women's March, and people didn't really take that seriously. They said, oh, but it was just about the hats. But in fact, a lot of those women were saying back then, we're going to run for office. We're going to find women to support to run for office. You saw the protests against the travel ban, many of which were led by women. The teacher strikes, of course, you know, 80% of those teachers are women. They demanded better wages in states, in some cases, where striking was illegal. The Me Too, the hashtag Me Too movement of last fall, which, of course, derived initially with Tarana Burke's Me Too movement from 2006. You've seen all of these different iterations of women's anger, and then the record number of women running for office. These are all connected. And the fury that was expressed about Kavanaugh, the most, I think, vivid example were the two women, Ana Maria Archila and Maria Gallagher, who yelled at Jeff Flake
in the elevator.
And that was so powerful for so many women because they were channeling the fury that millions of women were feeling around the country, and yet they weren't in an elevator with Jeff Flake, and they didn't have the opportunity to say, meet me in the eye, look at me, take me seriously.
And it wasn't even their rage. It was they were controlled. It wasn't like two crazy people. It was like, pay attention now.
Right. And anger is not about being unhinged. And that's one of the things.
Well, that's what you show.
To listen to it differently, instead of when you hear a woman's voice raised in anger, instead of immediately assuming that she's hysterical or crazy or unhinged or feeling over emotional or mean or cruel, hear it as instructive or diagnostic, telling us about whatever it is that she's angry about as something that needs to be addressed that might be broken and unjust.
Well, the book is really fascinating, Good and Mad, because you are going to be a participant in what's happened and looking at the anger of women. And it's not just now. It's over years and years and years, and showing how this kind of anger, when used the way we've seen it used in marches and in discussions and in books, can really change the face of history. But I'm curious, what made you, Rebecca, decide to write a book about anger?
Well, I'm a feminist journalist, and I've sort of known on one level that for years anger has undergirded the work that I do. I wouldn't be angry about gendered inequality, racial inequality, economic inequality. I mean, I wouldn't write about those issues if I weren't angry about them. And yet we're so discouraged from taking anger seriously as a rational frame if we're women that, you know, of course I'm not. I had taken care in my writing to sort of obscure my anger, to always be funny and cheerful, even if I was writing furiously about something. And there was a point after the 2016 election where I said, actually, to my husband, I can't even think clearly because I'm so angry, as if my anger wasn't instructive, but rather an impediment to thinking. And he said, you should write about the anger. And as soon as he said that, I realized, well, my anger was a guide. It was instructive. It was showing me my anger was a part of my thinking. It wasn't blocking my thinking. And then I began to think immediately about the history of women's anger and so many of the social movements that have transformed this country, from abolition and suffrage through the labor movement to the women's movement, the gay rights movement, the civil rights movement of the 20th century. Women's anger has been at the start of many of those movements, but we've never been encouraged to look back and take it seriously and identify it as righteous and politically consequential.
Yeah,
and I realized that that's what I wanted to do.
And righteous is the perfect word.
Yes, although I should point out it is not always righteous. Women's anger can also, I mean, I'm a politically progressive, left-leaning person, and so one of the things the book also looks at is how women's anger on behalf of conservative politics, on white patriarchal power, can also be potent. You look at the campaign of Phyllis Schlafly in the 1970s and 80s,
to stop
the passage of the Equal Rights Amendment. That was also, she was leading an army of angry white women to stop an expansion of rights and protections for women. And so we also have to consider that women's anger is not always progressive, and it is not always righteous, but it is very often politically potent. Right. And even that we're discouraged from acknowledging.
Did you grow up in a home of political activists?
Not activists.
What woke you up?
Left-leaning people who had come of age, and my father came from a very leftist home. My mother came from a conservative Republican home, but her politics had moved left while she was in college in the 1960s. And so I came from a home that I would say had very progressive politics, but they were not activists.
Right. So interesting. So their daughter has picked up the mantle and run with it. And, you know, after I finished Good and Mad, and that's Rebecca Traister's brand new book, and saw the election results, it was still shocking to realize that 50% of women in this country, white women, voted for Trump. I mean, you still, as much as we read and go back in history and marvel at history being made today, it's still, to me, like a shocking figure.
It should not be shocking. This is the history of, as long as we've counted, since 1952, white women have voted for Republicans, except for in two elections. And even before that, some of the arguments for suffrage were about enfranchising white women in part to cancel out the votes of black men who'd been enfranchised after the Civil War and emancipation. There's a very long history of white women being asked and then being very willing to support and defend white patriarchal power. And that's something that we really have to reckon with and ask the white women who are angry in progressive ways and who want to challenge that power structure to help counteract the anger and activism of those white women who are very invested in supporting and defending white patriarchy.
Well, never a better time to read Good and Mad. Congratulations to you, Rebecca. I look forward to talking to you again. What a time we're in.
Thank you so much for having me.
Anytime. And I'm Joan Hamburg, and you're listening to WABC, and stay tuned.